Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. Well, I'm a year older than the show last week. I've gotten my second vaccine, and the beautiful spring that we were enjoying for about 10 seconds has changed. We've been in the 40s and had a few nights of freezes, and on Monday, the most odd thing happened. I knew it had been cold in the 40s with north winds, and I heard the mowing service outside, and I looked out the window and saw the man on the rider going across the green grass in our front yard with snow coming down, big snow coming down. It really wasn't sticking. We didn't get an accumulation, but for quite a while there, I had this weird imagery of a riding, you know, a John Deere mower inside of a snow globe shaking it. That was a really weird thing to see because we don't hardly ever get snow in April, and I don't even remember in all my years seeing it April 19th, for Pete's sake. So hoping that next week is going to bring spring back and interesting experience. I had to get a laugh out of that Monday. With the pandemic and all, I haven't been out and about as much as usual anyway, so I just kind of looked out at that lawn guy and wondered if that maybe could have waited. But in any case, welcome. I'm so glad to have you guys here tonight. For those of you who might be new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers, and for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. So, I'm really excited to have our guest tonight. Vicki, who I'm going to bring on in just a moment, has a new book, Authenticity Awakened, and there's a longer title. Before I go on and do her full intro, what I want to say is we used to, way back when I was younger, which a lot of you are going to remember, the saying, and some of you will be too young, but there used to be verbiage where we talked about going to find ourselves. We wanted to find ourselves. And so if you had thought that you found yourself and then life was interrupted and you had to start that process over, like a lot of the listeners, including myself, here on this network, Or if you never really felt like you found yourself before, I think you're going to find Vicki's message helpful and empowering. Vicki Zavner, in her new book, Authenticity Awakened, The Path to Owning Your Life Story and Fulfilling Your Purpose, guides readers on how to mine their life story to discover their pivotal moments, values, and their purpose, which together create the foundation for ultimate success and a rewarding work life. She helps others understand their pivotal stories, life stories, their values, and their purpose by providing tools, exercises, and real-life examples. She has also incorporated significant research on the topic. As the awareness that one has of their authenticity deepens, it becomes increasingly more difficult to show up as someone they're not. By awakening your authenticity, you stop living someone else's life, cease simply going along with others' expectations of you, have the courage to admit your mistakes, ask for what you are worth, and have the courage to have difficult conversations with others. She guides you on all of this. For more, see Vicki Zavner, and that's VICKIZNAVOR.com. For those of you who are aware, you'll know this. For those that aren't, I always put it in the program notes, so you've probably clicked a link to be listening to the show in any one of dozens of places across social media. Or you can always go to braininjuryradio.com, and we'll be mentioning the website a couple times throughout the show, but I always put it in my program notes in the event you're in a comfy chair or driving or your pen's out of ink and you want to go back. So duly noted. With that, I would like to welcome Vicki, onto the show with us.
Thanks so much, Kim.
Welcome,
I'm so
Vicki.
Happy to be here. Thank you. It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about one of the things. I want to go back to something that I just read in your intro, and I bet I could just hear a collective sigh out there among listeners when you talk about cease simply going along with others' expectations of you, have the courage to admit your mistakes. But mostly for a moment, and we're not going to dwell on this, we'll come to it when we do, but while I'm thinking of it because I just read it, you know, one of the things that a lot of people around here, and like I said, I could hear a collective, yeah, I know how that works, going along with others' expectations of you, is that when people change, and you're going to be talking about pivotal moments, when people change in their life, particularly with brain injury, you know, there's the expectation, a couple different things that people around here deal with, and one of them is that there's the crisis itself, and for that, that's recognized because people are there when you're, you know, the family, the friends, the employers, all the people are there to see what's happened to you. But when you look normal again, you're not necessarily the person that you were before this happened, only it's not visible anymore. And so there's an expectation of others and often of ourselves that we respond and act and react and be who we were before. And whether that person before was truly authentic or not is up for debate. for grabs, but being able to be honest and move forward to redefine or reframe and be honest and empowered by who we are now, rather than cowering or acting as if we're not anywhere close to that point anymore, causes a lot of broken relationships, a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety, and just generally kind of a bummer situation. And so I'm happy that you're going to be here tonight, not only talking about the job front, certainly, but the person front, you know, and how we feel about ourselves, because that's going to reflect on our work life, if we have one, or our life in general, how we feel about ourselves, how we project to others. And you have a story that prompted you to write your book, and I'm grateful that you're here tonight to share us and enlighten us on how that's worked for you, because there's always a takeaway. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll leave it at that. There's always a takeaway that's going to be relatable no matter what we're talking about, because we all share the human existence, which is wrought with pivotal moments, frankly. So you wrote about a really good thing. Mm-hmm. And I like the way that you put that too. You know, there's a lot of different ways that, you know, people word that, but pivotal moments is concise and really nails it. But I'm going to let you explain for those who maybe didn't hit them immediately the same way that it hit me. I got that.
Sure, sure.
You know, when I started reading it. But then I got a head start on everyone else. I got to do, you know, some reading. So why don't we just start at the beginning, tell a little bit about your path to coming to your life story, and I'll interject and ask you some questions as we go. But I kind of just like to get a little background for everybody so they can get to know who you are and what you were dealing with and kind of the journey that you went on to come to what we're talking about tonight.
Sure, sure. Well, and I'll start with, there was some commentary that you said when we were sort of in the pre-show, and you said, you know, that the struggle wasn't always visible, and you sort of alluded to some of that here. And I would say, regardless of what people have gone through, I fundamentally believe that all of us have gone through many struggles, and the sort of the shape that those struggles take are different, and our human experiences is different. But I always believe that if you can look at the person that's you're engaging with, and you can see the humanity, that this is a real human being in front of me who has gone through, you know, who knows what, and I need to try to find a way to fully connect with that person. So as background, I spent 4 decades in corporate America. I was the daughter of a Mexican immigrant. Well, my dad is Mexican. He was born in Texas, but his mother crossed the border illegally in order to have my father. My mother was from Kentucky. Both parents struggled with alcohol addiction throughout my life, but they were lovely, wonderful people who absolutely did the very best that they could. I'm the youngest of 12 children, and my family had lots of struggles with, you know, money issues and I would say lack of consistency in our home, things like that. But there was always something inside of me that I can't quite explain, and I know in your book, Kim, you've talked about, you know, how God helps us walk through life and through our challenges, and you know, from a very young age, I felt a determination that my life would be different, that I needed to learn the lessons of the experiences that I was having as a child. I was a little old lady, probably at 8 years old, and trying to make everything right in my home and that kind of thing. But I went on to work after high school. I went right to work because I could not afford to go to college. But that was always a distant dream. And then when I was 21 years old, I decided that I would go to college. And I worked back then, this was the early 80s. It was sort of the first time where companies were offering tuition reimbursement. So I was able to, I was a lower level or entry level clerk at the time. And I took advantage of the tuition reimbursement, went to school for 15 years to get my undergrad degree. I got married and I had three children, and I just
Wow.
kept working, obviously, really, you know, I worked really, really hard, went on to get my MBA, and, you know, through many years, it took a long time, but I kept, you know, pursuing my dreams and, you know, lots of challenges. You know, there were many, many times when I was in the room and I didn't feel that I could contribute in the same way as a University of Chicago law school graduate, you know, a lot of those kinds of people were people that I worked with. But I never really lost hope, and I always thought, you know, I know I'm a bright person and I have things to offer, and I'm not really sure what my journey is. I had no idea where I would end up, but I just was convinced that if I kept working hard and kept having some humility and learning from all my experiences, that I would continue to do well. And I ended my career as a C-suite executive for a bank, and I was in charge of thousands of people's lives. I was the head of human resources. But the reason why this experience was so important, all those experiences that I had as a child helped me to become a much more empathetic HR executive. So I could see the humanity in other people who were going through very difficult times, loss of family members, dealing with addictions themselves, trying to overcome, you know, domestic abuse, having people that they loved, you know, with injuries and challenges. And those experiences really helped me to, you know, be an empathetic human being, and I believe at my core that we will all have better experiences at work and better experiences in general when we can see those people as we can see the humanity in each other. So writing the book, after I left my job in March of 2020, and I prayed a lot about what should my next step B and what should I do. I was passionate and will continue to be for the rest of my life. How do I help other people find joy in their life and their work wherever they happen to be on that journey? Because I had such an interesting and long journey myself. So I talked about writing the book to my friends and colleagues and things like that, and I asked them, what is my superpower, if you will? Someone had asked me that I should, you know, write about something that you really know about. And time again, authenticity came back to me. I didn't feel like an expert in authenticity, but I do know that I was able and blessed to be able to be a real human being, even as an executive, to other people. And that was really important to me. So I dug in deep. I did a lot of research, read hundreds of articles and books and things like that. And I came up with what I feel are tools that can really help people, you know, look at where they are, but also where they've been. And I know this concept of a pivotal life moment, one of the first exercises is actually to think about those pivotal moments in your life, 5 to 7 moments that you can reflect upon and say, I know that that particular moment changed me forever. And I'm carrying that with me, whether I've acknowledged that or not. So in my case, I hadn't acknowledged some of the challenges that I had as a child. I buried those deep and I put them away and I pretended like I was somebody else because I was a teenager at the time in particular that I can reflect upon. I didn't want to talk about those struggles with my friends and with my family. So I just pretended you talked about, again, things not being visible. I had gone through a lot of things, but if you ask my high school friends today if they knew that those things were going on, they would say absolutely not. So,
yeah, I was going to say they seldom do in homes where there's substance abuse going on. You don't often invite friends over because it's unpredictable.
Right.
Kind of scary when you come home yourself to know whether it's going to be a calm time or an explosive time. And I can't even imagine 12. Now, I was an only child, so 12 siblings sounds like, oh, my God, how did you do that? Be able to, and I suppose it was more difficult, and obviously one of the first stones on the path of your journey, but find your place within that group of siblings, because everybody kind of, well, and with 12, there's got to be a couple of each. You know, they talk about roles that people take on in homes where there's substance abuse. Sometimes you have the class clown, the parenting type figure, the other ones that there are, and there had to be a couple of each with that many kids.
Yeah,
in the house.
Yeah, it's a complicated story, and some of the stories, my mom was married 3 times, and we didn't really all grow up together in the same house, but I was the youngest, and it's a very complex, complicated thing. I had a brother who's only 11 months older than myself, and he and I, because we were much younger than the other kids, we mostly were the ones that lived together. But, you know, it was all of this just chaos, I would say. And, as you're reflecting on how does that impact you, so people that grow up in chaotic situations oftentimes become the opposite of chaotic. So they're overly regimented. Everything is planned. Everything is structured. Kinds of things. So I would say that was one way that it impacted me as a parent. It was everything was on time, structured, very little just being spontaneous, very little spontaneity. On my part, my husband is great at spontaneity. So I married someone that had a better gift at that than I did.
More controlled, probably. Everything was so out of your control younger. I would imagine that you would have had some issues being a control freak initially.
Well, sure. And
anyway.
Then, and again, I think that this is something that as we all look back on certainly over time, the older we get, the more we realize and the more we've experienced. But the older I've gotten, I've realized how little control, one really does have. Oh, and certainly when you've experienced trauma of any kind, you certainly, makes a much bolder statement, but you realize how little control you have over so much, and that you can't control the outcome, which is a quote of yours, which I love. You can only control the effort, and that's what I've learned as I've gone along, and that it is important to find joy, true joy, whatever that looks like for you.
Yeah, well, I was going to say it doesn't stop us all from trying, and I knew you wouldn't take offense to it because I think we all try to do that. We all have, and, we'll talk about those pivotal moments, but, usually we're somewhat powerless in that time or feeling helpless and overwhelmed. And I remember, you probably read it. One of the things I did, I was barely, I had been in a coma for 11 days and went through all the stuff I went through with my head injury, and then was at my parents' folks, and, you know, so many people had sent flowers and teddy bears and nice things, and I was taught, you know, when I was young, you know, you write thank you notes, and I couldn't see or walk or... I was in horrible shape, but my way of trying to control the uncontrollable was insisting on writing those thank you notes. And mm-hmm. my mom was like, Kim, nobody is expecting, you know, I mean, you like weren't going to live last week.
Right.
You know, you were dying last week. Nobody is certainly expecting a, I know what I taught you, but nobody's expected a thank you note out of you at all, let alone, you know, a week later. And, you know, I sat there and I would be writing those notes and, you know, I'd be transposing letters and spelling words wrong and getting so angry, but wouldn't stop. You know, wouldn't stop, just kept going, would throw that one on the floor and start over with a new one. It was like the maniacal need to control something because the situation was that out of my control. And, you know, that's, you know, I had learned before, although I temporarily forgot, obviously, in that instance, that, you know, the best we ever have is the illusion of control, because we really don't control anything except, like I said, our efforts. But then the outcome, once again, the only thing we control is not the outcome, but how we respond to it and how we deal with it with as much grace as possible.
Yes.
So.
Absolutely.
So challenging family situation, but then I wanted to also touch on when you talked about, I mean, how impressive you had your goals about getting your education and having a career, but did want to have your own family and got mm-hmm. married and had your kids, and that had to be, I just wanted to pause on that for a moment, because the way you say it makes it sound like that was easy. That must have been extremely challenging to try to be a wife, whatever that role looks like, and a mom, whatever that role looks like, have some autonomy within yourself, and then be pursuing your education. That was a pretty darn full bucket. And knowing, as you said, you know, that you had your goal in mind further down the road that kept you going through all the times you probably wanted to throw in the towel, because it would have been easier, you know, to just be a mom and a wife, you know, or just
hardest
to do something
job in the world
else.
For the parents
yes.
out there, I want you to know, I know it's the hardest job. It really is, and very humbling. I would say, Kim, it's sort of like when you're running a race, you don't necessarily realize how challenging that race is until you get to the other side and you look back. You know, hindsight is 20/20, or close to it anyway. And I was just going all the time. And I got to where I would say, because I'll go back to that whole being regimented thing, that was my survival mechanism, I think, was, you know, again, trying to control something that I really couldn't, but that was my best shot at it, was, okay, if you have the great schedule and you just keep, you know, making sure that everything is in line and all those things. So it wasn't easy, and I can remember at one point when I was, I don't know, I'm going to say maybe 35 or something like that, I can remember being in my car. I still hadn't finished my degree yet, my bachelor's degree, and the kids were little, and I remember just crying behind the wheel and thinking to myself, I died and nobody noticed because I had gotten so good at being the epitome of efficiency. And, you know, in hindsight, I would say kind of robotic. And so I had ceased to exist. And maybe this is something that your listeners can also, you know, certainly relate to, just a different sort of path there. But you sort of cease to exist and people don't really know because it's not obvious. In fact, in my case, it was obvious that I was amazing at all those things. You know, that's what it looked like on the outside, but I was really killing myself. But I will say that, so it wasn't easy, but I will say that I'm a firm believer in my case that my life was going to change for the better if I could just get an education. Now, I was blessed in that I didn't have any major obstacles to stop me. I had a lot of support. My mom, so, you know, my mom was amazing as a grandmother, and she helped me tremendously. My father helped me tremendously with childcare. My husband was a superstar with helping me, and they all were in on the dream with me. And without them, it would not have happened. So, you know, well, I was really lucky.
I was going to say, that's another thing, too, when I talk in the beginning of the show, that it's about the we and not the me, because so many of us couldn't have accomplished what we did without the help of others, because otherwise, you know, our shoulders aren't really broad enough to carry that rock
by
ourselves. Yet a lot of times we're afraid to reach out and be vulnerable to say that we need that help. Now, in your case, that may or may not have been true to whatever extent, because they knew what you were doing. It was probably obvious you needed some help, but not as obvious how appreciated it was, in that you were feeling some cracks in the facade doing what you were doing, even though you had that help. And I know that there's a lot of people that feel like they're alone in this, and their families aren't as supportive. And then, you know, we reach out, maybe it's not our family of origin, but, you know, sometimes we have a tendency to think that we're terminally unique when we're steeping in our own self-pity, basically, justified or not. And there's a lot of people in that exact same situation. So then maybe we network for other people who have been in that place and come out of it, or are in that place, and you're able to brainstorm together, you know, more ideas are going to be germinated with support than without trying, you know, trying to do it on our own. So being able to be, you know, the word surrender, I look at a lot, and that has to a lot of people a negative connotation. And in the context I mean it, it's surrendering to, this isn't something I can do by myself, and there isn't any shame in that. There isn't anything to feel bad about in that. In fact, it's empowering to recognize that I'm not the be-all, end-all, and that I can be honest about the fact that I can, you know, need help. Now, there's going to be people that are not receptive to that. They're too into themselves, or they haven't had learned empathy, like what you're talking about. They haven't been in a situation like that. And, you know, then I try to, again, not internalize that and take it personally, but realize they haven't been through a situation yet. No
right.
doubt they will, where
yeah.
they're going to learn empathy at some point. And they may or may not remember this moment I needed help, you know,
no,
but there's going to
sure.
be a moment where they're going to need it. And so you can rest assured in that, not that it's going to make you feel any better right this minute, but I think we also have a tendency, I know I did, I'll speak for myself, to take things personally because they hurt me or they affected me. And surprise, surprise, a lot of the time it had nothing to do with me. People were just that into themselves and their own thing that it wasn't anything for me to take personally. I just needed to move on with the goal, like you had a goal, whatever the goal is, if it's to build a support system. You know, if one says no or can't do it or doesn't work out, you don't quit. You just move forward. Okay, that didn't work. Next. That didn't work. Next. And you just keep going and don't dump the goal because the first shot out of the gate didn't work.
Right. And, you know, I think that this is why, you know, in my book, I walk the reader through the, you know, thinking about those pivotal moments that tells you where you've been and tells you a bit about, you know, obviously who you are and why you are who you are. And then I talk a lot about values. So values will sort of help you understand what's most important to you right now. What's most important? What are those values that you're carrying with you? And then, you know, thinking about your purpose. Now, the title of the book is Authenticity Reawakened. And the reawakening part was so important to me in the title because life is like that. You know, who we were, regardless of what you've gone through, who you are changes over and over and over again in your lifetime. And so if this reawakening happens where you're kind of checking in all the time and saying, you know, who am I? What's important to me? What do I need to do? Am I showing up in the way that's really important to me? Am I able to show up in a way that's important to me? And if the answer is no, then what do I have to do in order to do that? And, you know, my husband always says that it's better if you think about eating an elephant one bite at a time instead of, you know, the whole thing. So creating some meaningful goals that are, you know, 3 to 5 things that sometimes people, I know I do this with some of the things that I work on from time to time where I'll come up with, you know, 25 goals, and that's not the way to do it. It's really, you know, what's 1 to 3 things that I can do in the near term that will move the needle. And, you know, if you do a small thing every single day, and, you know, it's not unlike the work that you've had to do in, you know, recovering from your injury, but one little thing every day adds up to 365 things in a year. But you have to decide what's most important to you. And one of the things I love about modern times is that we have social media now. It can be a very bad thing, too, so I'm not in favor of all social media. But in terms of finding people to share, you know, certain groups that have interests that are similar to yours or needs that are similar to yours, that there is a more effective outreach now than there was when we were younger. That's I think terrific, where you can read things and you say, I'm not alone. There are so many other people who have gone through what I've gone through, and you have an outlet that way too. And I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, I do too. I feel the same way, mixed as you, about social media, but you're right. You know, when I experienced a pivotal moment, well, a couple pivotal moments actually, you know, there wasn't a computer on every desk. It's hard for people to imagine that today,
right.
You know, but there weren't support groups. Their social media hadn't been developed yet. I don't even think he had been born yet. that half of them had been born yet, or they were very
right.
small, you know, very young at that time. And I was talking to my guest last week about, you know, the first computers that came out that had the paper with the holes on
yes.
the side, you know, you had to tear out the paper, you know, and this was even predating that, you know, when those didn't even exist. And I kind of joked with a guest last week that my, you know, we looked at computers because I was in sales and I sold. And so my assistant is the one. We looked at the computer when it first came out as the updated IBM Selectric.
Right,
you know,
right.
The assistant was the one that used that as the newfangled typewriter, you know,
mm-hmm.
and printer, and then we'd tear the sides off of that paper, you know, to take our presentations out. So things were so much different, and you just weren't able, you're right, it was harder to find people that you could talk to and much easier to foster that feeling of terminally unique and I'm the only one going through this and being able to just look in different groups and social media and find different people, even people that you've known in your life but have, you know, have long forgotten about, you know, people you went to school with or church with or whatever from long ago, and you know, and they find you or you find them on social media and they've been through something similar. It's surprising. Well, it's not really surprising, I guess, but it's something to be grateful for that outlet is there to be able to find like-minded people or people that have been through the same thing and find, you know, some of that empathy you were talking about, because you can't mm-hmm. just talk to everyone or anyone
right.
about certain things. You know, there's just certain people you don't want to talk to about things. You know, I suppose, yeah, I'll just leave it at that. You know, there's a lot of things that you would leave unsaid that would eat your lunch.
Right. Yeah, and you know, that's where I think, you know, as you sort of think about, you know, where do I, you know, am I, well, you know, who do I want to show up as in this world, or, you know, what are one or two things that I can do that would make me feel like I am living a more authentic life. And it might be, you know, as you're thinking about sort of the tasks, the to-dos, you know, who can I, asking yourself, you know, to identify someone that you can talk to in an honest way about your situation. I wish I would have done that. You know, I didn't have a voice to do that. But now, you know, whenever I see, for example, like as we think about how do you help, what you're doing so such great work in helping others, Kim, is, you know, now when I see a young mom who is obviously frazzled and has a lot on her plate, I always stop and say, you know, I want you to know that you're doing a great job here. And this is really hard. This is a really hard job. And,
yeah.
you know, how can I help? So I think that that's important. Is once you get to the other side, being the person who can say, okay, I see myself in this other person, and what can I do to help in some small way? I think that that's a good step. If you've, you know, experienced a lot of, if you're grateful for where you are and you can lift someone else, that's a life well lived.
When you're talking about authenticity, just so everybody is on the same page,
mm-hmm.
Are you, because a lot of us are shaped, you know, what parents wanted us to be or mm-hmm. didn't want us to be. people that we dated, friends, groups of friends that we hung out with, you know, there's a lot of stumbling blocks along the way, and then there's a lot of people on the path I call the lantern holders, where you're attracted to the light and you follow that, and those people are going to help you get there. But to me, an authentic self means being able to live comfortably in my own skin by my own definition and not by the expectation or demands of others, which gets easy to fall into, especially if you haven't really been defined, or if you felt awkward maybe as a kid or out of place or like you didn't fit in, you know, then you already had some trouble maybe doing and saying and acting in ways that didn't feel exactly right to you in your gut, but you did it to fit in, to try to make friends, a lot of different reasons. So those things can take us away from authenticity before we even know it. And so you're referring to authenticity, you say reawakening it. That's why I qualified it in the beginning, saying if you even found it yet.
Well, sure. And
if you were even aware.
Yeah, we've all been shaped. Every single one of us has been shaped by, you know, starting when you're a small child. You know, if you watch a very young child just playing outside and really they're in the moment and you see the joy on their face, that's pure authenticity. And then, you know, when you start, you know, especially with girls, you know, I can relate because I am a female, but, you know, when you get to be around 7 or 8, people start telling you, sit straight, you know, don't sit this way, sit that way, say this, say that. And then as you get into a career, you know, my experience was that people, you know, I learned very quickly what behaviors got rewarded and which ones didn't. And, you know, I wanted to be rewarded, and so I conformed and all of that. This happens to all of us. So, you know, what I believe that we have to do, and I do believe that to some extent I did this throughout my life, but is checking in with yourself. I have what I'll call, you know, looking in the mirror and just asking yourself some basic questions. You know, am I showing up the way I want to? And again, you know, I know there's a lot of complexity to the answer, but sort of standing there or sitting there and thinking about whether or not the answer is yes or no. And if the answer is yes, you're showing up in the world in a way that's reflective of your values. My definition of authenticity is deciding who you are, and I'll say the definition, and then I'm going to tear it apart a little bit. Deciding who you are and how you're going to show up in the world to the extent that you wish to do so. So I don't believe that you should think of authenticity as I'm going to go tell every single person I encounter my whole life story and that kind of thing. And a lot of us don't feel comfortable sharing everything about ourselves, and that's perfectly fine. You own your story. So, but the most important thing is not worried about whether or not people perceive you as authentic, but you have to understand if you're showing up in the world the way you want to, the way that you believe is in perfect alignment with your values. So, you know, some things, for example, you know, I talked about my father being Mexican. I faced a lot. I saw my dad. He faced, my skin actually happens to be quite light. My father's skin was quite dark. He faced racism on a daily basis, every day of his life. And he was a very happy-go-lucky man about it, and he had a good attitude, and he tolerated a lot of things he really shouldn't have, but that was his coping mechanism, and I honor that was how he managed through that. But my value system is that I don't have tolerance for it. And so if I'm in a room, I know that that's really important to me. If I'm in a room and I know without a doubt that someone is, you know, being derogatory or discriminatory or whatever, I have a voice now, which I didn't have when I was much younger. I have a voice now to say, you cannot speak that way in my presence. It's against my core value, and it's unacceptable. And I don't really care who that person is. That's my example. But for you, whatever your values are, think about, okay, here's my values, and my book helps you walk through identifying what those values are. They're with you. They're with you all the time, but we lose them. This is the reawakening, is getting in touch with those values again. What's really important to me? And then ask yourself, okay, when I show up in the world, is it reflective? Does it show that that's important to me? If your value is care and concern for other people, do you show it? If your value is, that you believe in social justice, are you doing something, however small that might be, to, further social justice? So it's those kinds of questions for yourself. If it's, I want to be able to have an honest conversation with someone I love. Honesty is important to me in my relationships. Okay. What step can you take to have that honest conversation?
Mm-hmm. Are you finding today your book has, are you finding it challenged at all in, the world has changed so fast, or at least seemed to, in the last year? I talk about the four P's actually. My parents are both, they're sick. My parents are both sick.
I'm sorry.
I don't talk about that a lot on the show, but anyway, in the last year, I talk about the four P's, the things that have happened, right, or that are happening. Politics, protests, pandemic, and parents. And I said I was tongue-in-cheek one night when I said my next book is going to be the four P's that brought me to my knees.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, now nobody take that. It's on tape and theoretically copywritten at this point. But, no break. No break from those four P's in the last however long it's been. It's getting to be so long.
Yeah.
That it makes it harder to, I'm not going to judge it. Some are absolutely deserving and some I don't think so. But, the part of, social media that we were talking about for one, but it's also happening a lot in the workplace that it seems like you're having to censor yourself
mm-hmm.
like never before and walk on eggshells
mm-hmm.
to be able to have these conversations. And, I watched social media back when the campaigning and stuff was going on more particularly, I guess, but on social media and on the shows, I saw something I had never really seen before, and I'm no spring chicken, and that's, I've seen people disagree a lot in my life, but if they disagree, let's say, on something political, they would have that disagreement and then go have a cup of coffee and go fishing or go to writer's class or whatever, and the relationship continued. And
mm-hmm.
I've seen longtime friendships, even family relationships,
mm-hmm.
totally blow apart, maybe forever, over these same types of things that people seem to be able to agree to disagree and move on. There was something that brought those people to many compartments that brought those people together or attracted them to each other in the first place. And that thing they disagreed over was one element, one piece of the entire pie. And I've watched in awe, you know, shock and awe the last over a year, you know, and oh my God, you know, how did this happen so fast? It feels to me like it happened so fast that it makes it harder if you have to censor your authenticity for fear of losing your job or getting kicked off social media, you know, or something like that. That part of social media, I hate that it has that kind of power, that we allow it to have that kind of power. But it has that kind of power because that's where we've connected with people and with people and spend some time with people. So we use it as a tool, as a social outlet, as a professional outlet. And when they have the power to just take that away and there's no one to call, there's no one to write. You know, when we started out, there was a thing called customer service and a thing called a telephone. And you could call
a number. Human being.
And, talk to a warm body, say, you know, I think there's some confusion here. You know, and there's like absolutely no recourse. In some of those situations that are going on right now. And I don't think that that part of it is productive. It just causes people to either act out because they resent that. Not a lot of people like to be controlled unfairly, maybe in some cases. But have you found that you just stay authentic but avoid talking about anything controversial at all? And there's some things that you didn't even know were controversial.
This wasn't religion
or politics or anything.
I was head of human resources, and so you know you want to create a workplace where you know where the fundamental sort of baseline belief is that you respect each other as human beings and that you have respectful conversations. And you know, I would say that another couple of P's I'll throw at you is one is perfection, that authenticity doesn't mean that you're a perfect person, and it doesn't mean that you should expect other people to be perfect either. And then purpose. So, you know, as you weed through some of all the noise that comes at us, there's so much noise I'll go back to that mirror. You know, when you're looking in the mirror and it's just you, that's the most, and I guess I'll give you another P, powerful. That's the most powerful conversation, and yet it's one that we avoid. In fact, we get lost in social media scrolling, and it's such a waste of time and a waste of our lives because we're not really checking in with ourselves. There's all of this other stuff coming at us. You know, as I think about, for sure, I got lost in some of those conversations and some of those people that, you know, there were some people on social media that, you know, I was, quote, friends with because I'd always known them. But, you know, when I saw certain behavior, so, for example, I can disagree with you, but the first time you call me stupid or the B word, we're done. And and so,
right, yeah.
You know, so to me, when I would see those things, that's when I would say, okay, if I think of Facebook, for example, as a social gathering or a party, would I want to be at a party in real life with this person? And if the answer is no, I'm not at any social media with that person either. And I can still wish them well. And that is my core value, to wish every human being the very best for them. It doesn't mean that I have to go on the journey with them. So that's how I believe that, you know, I need to conduct my life. And it's brought me another peace. It's brought me some peace when I can say, when I say that it's okay to let go of relationships that are no longer serving you. I guess this goes back to this reawakening. You know, just because you had a friend when you were 12 years old doesn't mean you have to finish your life being friends with that person. So, you know, That's one thing. You know, the pandemic.
That's a great point. Mm-hmm. I just want to stop there. We'll go back to the pandemic, but that's a really good point. The way I did that is I really had to limit my way of controlling being controlled by social media was limiting my time there. I mean, I've never had notifiers on my phone and all of that kind of stuff because I knew that they put a lot of money into making it addictive before they opened the doors. They spent millions making it addictive, just like they do in casinos. So purposely, you know, the algorithms, the money, everything their business model is based on has to do with the amount of time we spend there. And so I would see, you know, there's nothing like what you just said. If I've got values of who I want to be, and you spend too much time on social media, there's going to be button pushers. You know, you're going to run into button pushers who really test those core values. They don't change them, but, you know, nobody, like you said, nobody's perfect. You know, there was a few people I wanted to come back on, and I was like, okay, you know, my answer to this is, not participating, you know, because it, you know, when I thought of Facebook in the first place, in the very beginning, and I missed the first round of social media and didn't start doing it until I started having a radio show. And then I was initially using them as a promotional tool. Sure. And it turned out to be, it was quote unquote known as social media. And so that had a connotation. You know, people my age at the time that I got on Facebook, you know, they were getting on Facebook because they never saw their kids or their grandkids because they had their face in a phone.
Right.
You know, and so, you know, they were tuning into Facebook just so they could see what their family was doing, you know. The time that used to be spent more in person or visiting on the phone was gone to social media. So if you wanted to be social and know what was going on with friends and family and so forth, then you joined social media, you know, and then somewhere, you know, I never thought of it as being a news outlet. That is a ridiculous thought to me that social media would be a news outlet, for God's sake. And a couple of other things I found out it was never occurred to me that under the heading of social media, that really encompassed so many things unspoken that would take me away, you know, from being my authentic self. And I had to do that with news too. TV news, shut it down and understand that sensationalism is what drives ratings. So again, just like social media, time spent on there is what drives their success. You know, sensationalism is what draws a bigger market share to one channel over another. And I had to learn pretty much that you go to one station and it's bias so far one direction, and you flip to the other and it's so far biased the other direction that they're both not completely honest, that each has a kernel of truth, and that somewhere in the middle you have to find your truth, your interpretation.
Yes.
If you can even get the real facts, because they changed the goalposts. And that's where I kind of got upset and really tuned out a little more on the news, is that it, at least they used to report facts before. Now they make things up, you know. You know, and we find out later, you know, wait a minute, that wasn't even the truth. And look how much trouble that caused, you know, between people and on social media.
And, you know, and that's another, so for example, One of my core values is integrity. And so I asked myself, what does that really mean? How does that show up in my life and those kinds of things? So the way I, my conclusion for myself, and you all have to answer the question for yourself, was, okay, there are some things that were really important to me in the presidential election, et cetera, but I told myself I would never post anything or repost anything that I hadn't done the research myself. And so I that's what I stuck to. And so, you know, I don't post a lot as it relates to those kinds of things anymore. But when I did, I had made sure that I did my homework. And I would say, you know, that's the kind of question that you have to ask yourself, because so many things, I'm just shocked at some of the things that, you know, I think of the world as being a container. And you have to decide for yourself if you're going to be a person that puts good things in the container or if you're going to put garbage in it. You know, you haven't done your homework. You're just going to share anything, those kinds of things. You know, and if that's your values, you know, that's your values. But I think most of us strive, you know, I believe most people are good people and we strive to do good things. But, you know, one of the ways of doing good things is to make sure that what you're putting out into the world is reflective of the kind of person that you truly want to be.
Yeah, and yeah, I agree. And I don't do that either. I've got an uncle who, God, I don't know when he has time to do anything else. He's got posts. I love him to death, but Jesus Louise.
Yeah.
You know, he's on there and it's, there are other things, but it's mostly politics. And, you know, on mine, the listeners who are friends of mine on Facebook know that I take pictures and do photography, and my Facebook page is Life in Photographs, Our Life in Photographs, which, you know, was a risk when I decided to do it that way in the beginning, but I just trusted the universe. And it's interesting because, you know, there's people listening tonight that, you know my dogs, you know, they know about the owl that is our visitor, Hootie, and we'll ask how Hootie is Hootie still there? And, you know, and so I just didn't get into the politics, except that there was a few times I wandered off my page, heaven forbid, you know, and tripped into a hole, you know, where people were talking about it. It just, you know, never put that stuff on my page, but, you know, a couple times where I engaged, that really isn't what I want to do. Because you're not going to change anyone's mind.
Right.
It's just going to be a fruitless argument that stirs hard feelings. And I don't want to do that. You know, certainly there's things I got an opinion on everything, I guess. You know, whether I talk about that or not, you know, is something else, but
right.
Certainly I'm not going to walk in and stir the pot. There's enough people doing that. You know, there's enough people stirring the pot of discord out there that I'd rather stick to animals and sunsets and pretty spring flowers and things that make me and other people happier, bring, you know, a little lightness, because like I said, for me the last year and a half, it's been, you know, really a lot of those, your mirror is my self-checks, I guess I would call them, you know, just taking time for self-checks and things were feeling so heavy, you know, that I was having a period of time where you feel like that little rat in a maze, you know, that walking and bumping into the wall and finding, you know, and bumping into the wall and stuff just things that they, it seemed so heavy, you know, that I had to find a way back to, and you said it earlier, you know, those simple pleasures. And that's when years later I wrote my second book about Hootie's Hollow and the magic tree, is it was all about, it all happens in my backyard. And it's all very simple things that happen in nature. And I needed to cut all the way back to the most simple in the moment in my own backyard, Dorothy.
Yeah.
Shut out the social media, shut out the news, and try to find that other P you threw in, my peace, because I can't blame it on all those things I just did, because I was absorbing them and letting them affect me.
Yeah.
And not as an excuse, but one of the top 10 things I started keeping a list a long time ago in the brain injury community is, you know, full basket syndrome. We, a lot of us used to be people that could multitask like a big dog, type A's that could multitask, juggle balls. And mm-hmm. something we had to adjust to is our brain processing slower than it did before.
Mm-hmm.
Still processes the information, but you can't juggle 12 balls anymore without getting, no pun intended, hit in the head with them, you know, when
right.
they all start tumbling down. So to your husband's wisdom, you know, you have to eat that elephant in smaller bites and have more realistic expectations. And so, you know, walking into social media and the news and certain groups were like, walking into my worst nightmare. It was going to play to my weakness, not to my strength.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things this pandemic has given us that's a really positive outcome is that most people have recognized, you know, some challenges with working at home. One guy I talked to several months ago, he said, you know what, I just, my wife has the only other spare bedroom that we have is a home office. And he said, and my office is in the bedroom. He said, I realized that I spend 20 hours a day in my bedroom. And
yeah.
Adam Grant has written a book called Think Again, which is about how we think and this whole concept about, you know, wanting to be right and that type of thing. But he's been talking a lot about the fact that we've all been languishing and that there's this feeling of, you know, blah, and it's sort of a void between depression and flourishing. It's the absence
mm-hmm.
of being well. And, you know, as an HR person, and I would say that we've grown more aware of mental health. And we're talking about it more, and other people are finding a voice to say, yeah, you know, I'm languishing too, or I
yeah.
don't well. So that this is one of the good outcomes from the pandemic, because even if they're not in the exact same, obviously not in the exact same place as someone who's experienced a traumatic brain injury, there is more awareness of what it feels like for things to not be right and to not know how to figure out how to make it right. And to have a voice about that, I think, is a very positive outcome for us. And I do hope that we can start talking more about this and about feeling well, because we've all been struggling.
Yeah. Well, in our community, it's been... there's been a few laughs in that when you talk about empathy, you know, a lot of us have had moments in time where we've had lockdown.
Yes.
Due to our injuries, you know what
right.
I mean? And so the rest of the world during the pandemic was just experiencing something we've all experienced
right.
before, you know? So a lot of us had already learned to entertain ourselves, you know, without going stir crazy, you know?
Right.
And that was a good thing for us. It's like, hey, join the group, really. You'll get through this part of it. You know, there's all kinds of things you could try and you know, we were talking about that, but I laugh because my husband works remotely, and we actually, it's our house. We could do, you know, things different. Our master bedroom is actually the office. His desk is there, and my desk is there, and three dog beds and a bird are in there. And, my husband, it sounds like there's a similar dynamic. I'm a more even though I'm spontaneous and now I'm not that controlling person, I don't think that I was a long time ago, but I'm a more intense person mm-hmm. and more spontaneous, but intense. My husband is super laid back,
mm-hmm.
just way laid back. So living with him is like taking a sedative. No, not it's not like that. I mean in a good way. You know, he brings my blood pressure down, you know, just by the way we can communicate, because I can be wound up like a top, you know, talking 100 miles an hour about something that's really got me pissed off, you know, doing that. And he has a calming effect, you know, and at the same time, you know, his daughter has said, you know, his life was kind of dull before he met me. He went to work and he came home. I mean, he does techie work, you know, for the government, and then he would come home and do techie leisure and isn't a real social person. And I was a super social person. And so,
right.
you know, it's worked out really well that he's gotten to have a more spontaneous, exciting life, things he never thought he'd be doing, you know, dressing up in Easter costumes with the dogs.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's the other thing. Like, yes, I mean, you know, and when I talk about joy, that's actually, you know, I'm not, you know, I think it's the little things like that, like you just described, you know, looking at somebody and feeling like you just had a great conversation and they heard you and you heard them. That can be joyful. It's those kinds of things, knowing that someone's got your back, I think is one of the greatest joys that we can experience in this life. So, you know, that's the kind of thing. I think it's also when we talk about authentic, being authentic and knowing who you are, it's, you know, think for yourself, what does joy look like for you wherever you are? You know, in you know, whatever the situation that you find yourself, what do you think would be joyful? And I think seeking joy is also a human right. So, you know, seek joy, and it's not always, in fact, most of the time, it's very small things.
Yeah, it really is, and that helped a lot to have it be simple things, changing my perception, you know, of what was fun and what brought me joy, and then disengaging from some of that intensity, which is, you know, that balance. That I mean, the way I find balance in my trying to stay authentic is staying away from certain things, you know, that are going to be triggers and plugging into which, you know, tree the robin's going to build a nest in, you know, and just enjoying some of those kind of things. And really, you gotta do it. It's, you know, for a while, especially, you know, with the pandemic, in the beginning of the pandemic, everybody's scared and concerned. And even if we weren't the listeners here, you know, as a group, real concerned about having to stay home or whatever. That wasn't the part that bothered us, but
sure.
A lot of us have pre-existing conditions. So
right.
The fear, you know, the fear of the pandemic, and most of us have had to live with residuals from our brain injury.
Yeah.
And so knowing a lot of people who have had COVID who are living maybe forever with residuals from that.
Yeah.
And then the mixture, you know, the people that didn't think it was a big deal, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
It's hard not to be affected or to get involved and respond. You know, so many people, for a lot of people, it is like the flu. They get it and it goes away. And there's other people I know that didn't have pre-existing conditions before, and the virus just went where it feels like going. I've got a friend that is waiting for a heart transplant.
Mm-hmm.
Another that got COVID about, a year ago now. She got COVID like toward the beginning back in March, and has been in the hospital with pneumonia
mm-hmm.
Like 12 times
mm-hmm.
In that amount of time, and is still getting 3 breathing treatments a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's stories on the news all the time. So if it was a matter, you know, what we were seeing for a long time were the numbers, you know, again, the sensational part, the numbers of the deaths and the positives. But one thing they really weren't talking about a lot or showing numbers on, they, hard to tally them at that point, but showing the in-between, you
right.
know, and that was something that we were all aware of pretty early on, because
yes.
there were a lot of people in this group of people that I'm talking about, over and above the ones that I just talked about that were friends that didn't have pre-existing conditions. You know, everyone here not only had experience being at home, so that didn't drive us as crazy as it drove some other people, but the fear, you know, of going out and getting the virus, knowing that we had underlying conditions was, you know, that's another thing. You know, you've just got to really use every skill that you have, because you can't walk around in fear all the time, but you also can't walk around like everything is normal.
That's right.
You know, toss your safety precautions, and we all know it's not a hoax now, and whatever. You know, you got to find that place that, you're prudent but not living in fear. So, you know, all of that, all of those P's, okay, another P, this is cool, our whole show is on P's here around authenticity, but that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
God, now I forgot my P.
Oh no, a lot of P.
I know, I lost my P.
So for all the
not
listeners,
really,
Kim and I are going to write a book all about peas.
yes. God, we could go on and on peas. Process.
Ah,
that's
yes.
the word I was looking
great.
For, because those were also huge. You know, pandemic was huge. The protesting was huge. The politics was huge. You know, my family situation was huge. And all... you know, nothing I could fundamentally change. There were some things I could do, but nothing that was going to fundamentally change these huge things, and to process all of them at once without a break, relentless.
Yeah. It's been
That's
a lot.
Hard.
It's our shared humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been a lot for all of us. But yeah, I mean, you're right, Kim, in that, you know, we've got to figure out you know, we've got to overcome this. But, you know, as I thought about what you were saying about the pre-existing conditions and all of that, you know, I have thought to myself, you know, I'm fully vaccinated now, thank goodness, but I know that I'm going to still wear my mask, and until I'm comfortable, you know, that the data is there so that I don't need to. But why? Well, the reason is that I would never be able to live with myself if I thought that I was irresponsible in some way and harmed somebody. You know, most of us are good people, and we don't want to harm other people. We don't want people who, you know, to die unnecessarily because we didn't want to wear a mask or because we didn't take the precautions that we needed to. And so, you know, if you love your fellow human being, you know, it's like, okay, ask yourself, you know, how hard is it to take some of these precautions so that you don't put somebody else in harm's way? We lost a person I know back in March, and I wish that he was here to, you know, see that people are getting vaccinated now and all of those things and how awful, you know. And we've had, you know, over 500,000 people who have lost their lives. I've got a friend now, his daughter's in the hospital. She's in her 40s. And I would just never, I think most of us could say, yeah, I would never want to harm somebody. And if that's your value, then, you know, wear a mask.
Yeah, well, it's going to take a while. And, you know, they said that, you know, that it's going to take a while for the herd immunity to set in. And I think we're at about a third, a little over a third now. So it'll, you know, it'll be a little more time, but hopefully, you know, we've had some time to process, and the, you know, they've talked a lot about COVID fatigue and people just getting sick of doing that, which, you know, then you really have to check in with your, do those self-checks and see what part is being impatient. What part is being selfish? You know, is that what I want to be and do, you know, because of these outside factors? Is that the way I want to react instead of respond, you know, as a responsible person? But so back to your book. Now, one thing, I just have to mention this real quick, because when I read it, you talked a little bit about your impressive work career, but you talked about the bank and Northern Trust, but I see that you also worked at the Sara Lee Corporation. And my favorite thing when I was a kid was Sara Lee's brownies. I don't even know if she makes them anymore, but they had that frosting on the top.
Yes.
I really hate to just break into all the serious stuff we've been talking about with Sara Lee brownies, but when I read that in your deal, I smiled because I was like, brownies. I haven't thought of those in a million years. You know, you think of one of those simple pleasures from when you were a kid, you know, and I haven't thought of Sara Lee brownies in, God, 60, 50 years, whatever. But I read that in your bio and I thought, how cool, she worked with Sara Lee. And I know she has a lot more things, but I really liked those brownies.
Yeah, and you know what, that's one of the things in all of our, you know, if we're blessed enough to work at a company that can have a lingering memory like that for someone, it's such a gift. So I worked there most of my career, actually, 26 years, 26 out of 40. I worked at Sara Lee, and every morning we would get banana bread and or banana cake, which was my personal favorite, bagels, and I would go on trips to the plants, and I would see the pies being made. And Sara Lee as a corporation, actually, the baked part of the goods was a very small part of the business. It was predominantly a conglomerate, so brands like Coach, for example, was part of Sara Lee, or Hanes and Bally, and you know, Hillshire Farm and Cons. So a lot of, you know, amazing consumer packaged good products came from that corporation. But the one brand that stood out, and it used to be Consolidated Foods, and that's why Sara Lee named itself Sara Lee back in the mid-'80s. It was because that brand had such consumer awareness. And I'm so proud of, you know, we had 140,000 employees in 60 countries. That corporation no longer exists, and the brand still exists, and the baked goods are still being made, and they're still under the brand name of Sara Lee, but the corporation no longer exists, unfortunately. But I loved being a part of that legacy. I talk about legacy in my book, but this is a corporate legacy, and when someone can say what you just said, it warms my heart, because I always felt that we were doing something important for our employees and for families around the world through a seemingly simple product, you know, a baked good or dinner or even a great T-shirt or purse. So very proud to be part of Sara Lee.
Absolutely, and I was kind of laughing when you, like, I had the visualization of the guy on the riding lawnmower in a snow globe earlier when you were talking just now. I get weird visualizations like that. I was picturing, great, you could buy some hose and put your brownies in your new purse.
Yes, absolutely. We'd have no other way, but yeah, those are really good. And again, you go back to simple, simple joys, you know, really being able, you know, a lot of times we sit at our desks and we eat our lunch, or we're eating our dinner in front of a television, or, you know, we're scrolling social media when we're eating. But if you think about some of the, like, it's such a basic pleasure to have a nice meal. It doesn't have to be anything fancy. It can be a box of macaroni and cheese and a soft drink with your child or your best friend or your spouse. Some of those things can be the most beautiful experiences that we have, and it costs nothing but our time, and we really got to engage with the person across the table from us.
Right, and I think that's one thing hopefully people will have a takeaway from, you know, from the pandemic time, and as we're moving forward, you know, thankfully it's spring and we can get outside. Winter, you know, in our neck of the woods was a challenge, but to for my husband and I to I mean, it wasn't a challenge for us, but because we wound up being good at it, but, you know, easily, you know, we could sit there in front of a computer all day, but to have that opportunity to have the time, because normally you don't have that kind of time together. And so to use that not being together, you know, together but separate, it's like when you're sitting around a table with kids these days, you're not really together. Everybody is individually sitting there absorbed into their device at the same table. I don't really consider that together, you know. And so, you know, my husband, I made a joke on here one night. We've had shows on art therapy before, and I had gotten, there was a time, it was before the pandemic, it was a trendy thing because it seems like you couldn't turn around in any kind of store without bumping into a display of adult coloring books. And so my husband and I made kind of a joke, the allegory about how it really displayed the differences in our personality. And it's something that you said about social media, you thought you knew someone and, you know, then something would come up and you'd realize that you really hadn't known them at all, or not in exactly the way that you thought you had known them. And my husband is a really good colorer, if that's the word. He colors very well. Let me restate that. You know, even-handed, inside the lines. I mean, they're truly like really good pictures that he colors. And me, I didn't color in the lines when I was a kid. I can't color in the lines now. I'm heavy-handed on part of it, light-handed on part of it. It's kind of all over the map. And so, you know, we'd look at our pictures when, and they also were very detailed, like they were mandalas. And I mean, I got some pretty complex coloring books. I wish I would have just got some of those kid ones. You know, I mean, these could have taken half your life to finish these pictures in here. I mean, if we would have gone past that, but I made him do rock painting and pumpkin painting at a certain point. But, you know, with the coloring, I said, isn't that so indicative of our personality? You know, you're so level and even keeled and inside the lines, and, you know, and I'm outside the lines and don't care. You know?
Right.
You know,
and you know that about yourself. And that's the part that's so important. You know that about yourself, and you appreciate that your husband's a person who colors in the lines, and he's, you know, very measured. And it's good that you know that.
Yeah. You know, I may not have always appreciated that when I was getting graded on art as a kid.
Right.
But, you know, now that I'm not getting graded on art, well, you know, then I'm fine with who I am. You know, everybody can't be vanilla. Some people are just spumoni.
That's right. You know, and if that's who you are, love that about yourself.
I do. I've grown accustomed to it at this point and can appreciate that because I'm free to change up at any time. And it's kind of in my artwork. It's expected, you know, you know, that I'm going to change up. You never know when I'm going to color outside the lines. Pretty much, you know, Gary's not going to. You know, you pretty well know where he's going to be, you know, at any given time. He doesn't know what I'm going to do. But, you know, also in that we talked about in those shows on art is our perception. And, well, why don't we talk about how perception plays into your book and your journey? Because, you know, when I thought about art, before we had some shows on art therapy and then wound up opening a Facebook page called the Disability Art Page for anybody listening out there, was my idea of what art was if you could draw or not.
Right.
Well, that was such a narrow, limited view.
Yes.
Of what art is, you know, and after writing a couple books and some photography exhibits and awards and things like that, and doing podcasts for 10 years once a week, you know, there are so many forms of art, and you can, you know, other people, music, you know, that's something I love to listen to, but I can't write songs or perform it. So, you know, we each have our gifts. And, you know, what I found out is that everybody is an artist.
Yes.
It's just how they manifest it. Well, now that's not a thought I would have had at all as a kid, much too narrow of a view. Mm-hmm. And so I think we need to do that with ourselves, too, when looking for our own authenticity. And you probably discussed that when you're talking about the pivotal moments and identifying values and facing fears and curiosity and the things that you talk about in your book is really probably getting out of some of the rigidity and narrow perceptions that we might have once had and searched a broader playing field to come to where we are on our path, that we feel comfortable in our own skin and can act and interact in a way that's more genuine.
Yeah, and, you know, I do think, you know, so for it's funny you should mention art. So today I was talking to someone about I'm unable to draw very well at all. So, but I love handwriting, cursive writing, and I write a lot of notes, and I find such joy for myself in, you know, cursive writing and all those kinds of things. And to me, that is my art. I have a daughter who in the morning, she's a young mom, and she finds time somehow to apply her makeup. And she said to me the other day, you know, Mom, it feels like art to me. And I thought, I agree. That's your art. That's your alone time, whatever it might be. You know, some people like to decorate, and that's their art. That's lovely. Some people put together amazing outfits, and that's a kind of art. So, you know, I think it's the whole, whether it's art or anything else, you know, defining for yourself who you are and what is important to you and how you're going to show up absent what other people are telling you. And again, getting real with yourself, I think is really the path to living, you know, a life that is authentic for you and on purpose, on your purpose, not somebody else's.
Yeah, and I think that's very important, especially in view of the last year and a half we've been talking about, is still being able to embrace who we are. Because, again, you know, that this period of time has been a challenge for us to hang on to that. You know, if our authenticity has been reawakened or we're on the path to awakening it, this could have dimmed the light, you know, in some ways, but instead using it as a springboard to not lean into that, you know, that's, there's so many things set up to help us fail right now. But when you change your perception a little bit, hard to look at the bright side on some of those things, but things happen as they're going to happen, and they're going to play out, and we're going to deal with it with the most, like I said, with the most grace as possible, and come out the other side, hopefully, you know, with lessons learned that are just going to enhance our authenticity or reinforce our authentic self, and just be lessons learned from a very difficult situation. So I think, you know, there's been a lot of pivotal points for people everywhere,
yeah,
just in this last year and a half because of external forces, you know, external things that are going on. I think those have been, your book's very timely. It's a great theme for anybody, anytime. But when you talk about pivotal points, everybody, I think, has faced some difficult pivotal points on many different levels in all those categories that we were talking about, and really put their mettle to the test.
Yeah.
And helped clarify those values. You know, particularly, I think, you know, help clarify and differentiate that values. There's been some things pushed into the light that you didn't necessarily think of so much before. You know, life just kind of went along, and some of those things were not an issue until they became an issue. And then you had to look at where you stood in those issues, whether it be any of those P's, you know, where you were with it. And so it's been an interesting but difficult journey. But as you said, and I think it's important for everyone to remember, is that we've all been doing this together. So there isn't anybody who feels like they're in a vacuum out there, polarized, and been experiencing this on your own. You know, and I talked to my folks about this, you know, because they're talking about all the things they're not doing. And I suppose as you're older, mm-hmm. and I understand when illness ties you up, you know, you're not doing as many of the things as you're used to doing. But okay. while I understand that, and I have empathy for that and their particular situation, I do have to remind them that everybody's going through that.
Right, right.
You know, everybody's going through it, not just people at a certain age with certain health conditions, but everybody's going through it. And then what invariably happens is she throws out people her age that are out there acting normal, not practicing precautions, you know what I mean? They're traveling, the whole family's getting together, you know, they're doing everything that goes against the social, the safety protocols and so forth. And, you know, I just got to say, look, everybody has got their, is going to do what they're going to do. You know, I hope that they're not going to pay the consequences, but I know we're not.
That's right, and that's all
you
control. And yeah, and I mean, you know, the only other thing I would say is, you know, during this pandemic, a lot of business has been conducted, for example, on Zoom, and you see the inevitable cat walking across the desk or the little toddler walking into the room while mom or dad is on the phone. And I think it's given managers and coworkers and friends and family an opportunity to see into other people's homes. We've never really done that before. So we're seeing, okay, you know, gosh, I can see that, you know, Janet is stuck there in a tiny little corner in her house and she's got a lot on her plate. And I think, you know, it does have the potential to build in some empathy, because I think a lot of times when we're with people at work, we just kind of try to put, you know, the fact that they live these complex lives off to the side, and we just have stuff to get done, and you sort of forget the humanity. So I think, again, this is, you know, if we don't learn this very basic thing, you know, how to reach out to people, and hopefully it will expand to people who are going through all kinds of challenges in this life, to say, you know what, I've learned to be a little less insular as it relates to, you know, caring about other people, not just my family, not just my closest friends, but I see how small this world actually is. You know, the fact that, you know, a virus could spread like it has in such a short amount of time across the entire planet, you know, is pretty eye-opening. So, you know, again, if that's your value, and I think most of us do value other human beings, then let's decide what that means for you. How are you going to show up, you know, after this pandemic? You know, asking somebody, how are you, and standing there long enough to look them in the eye and listen for the answer with some humanity is really a powerful gift.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Well, we've got about 10 minutes left. For anyone who, excuse me, came in late, swallowed wrong. My guest tonight has been Vicki Zavnover. I have trouble with that. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
V-I-C-K-I-Z. NAVOR.com.
Yeah.
Make sure to check out her website. And again, you can go to braininjuryradio.com or anywhere you might have clicked on a link, and I've got her website written down. She's author of her new book, Authenticity Awakened, The Path to Owning Your Life Story and Fulfilling Your Purpose. And you know, again, our life story is our responsibility. A lot of things happen externally. to us that come from the outside, whether it's the things we talked about in the last year and a half or pre-pandemic, you know, the pivot points that happened in our life. You know, we can blame a lot of things for not making movement or moving forward or taking responsibility for our lives. But ultimately, we have a huge hand in creating and owning our own life story and fulfilling our purpose. Without a purpose, you know, we've had some difficult talks on here about what happens when you don't have a sense of purpose. And a lot of us did. And then that purpose was taken away and we were at a stepping off place where we had to work on new purpose, you know, redirecting our energies toward something that was going to fulfill our purpose or get reinvested, if that was an option, in what gave us purpose before. But to have the most fulfilling life, the happiest life, the fullest life, I guess, we need to have the empowerment of owning our story and taking the action we need to take to be working within our purpose. And I think you probably found in human resources that people who were working within their authentic self in their job description and not just doing the job for the sake of the job to put the food on the table, which a lot of people need to do.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, hopefully that goal is being able to work at something that gives you a sense of purpose more than just putting food on the table, which I don't mean to minimize, hugely important, roof over your head, but also bringing you soul fulfillment, you know, something that you're happy doing. And you described that in your job with Sarah Lee, and I hope everybody is able to have those kinds of takeaways, whether it's in a job or if you're doing volunteer work, excuse me, or online, a lot of people doing remote things that they didn't do before. Like you said, the Zoom meetings, I heard a funny thing the other day, and now I can't help it. I'm watching it at all the Zoom meetings I'm in, but the backgrounds, I never really thought about the backgrounds when I first got on. I was just on, I didn't want whatever it was to be busy, so I just found a place downstairs where there's a window with a picture next to it that I took that's on a canvas, and so whatever, neutral background. But I read a thing, and now I'm seeing it all over people's Zooms, and I'll probably drive everybody crazy by saying this because you'll all be doing it on Zoom, but it said that if you had a background that were bookshelves, that you were, it signified that you were a more thoughtful, intelligent person.
Mm-hmm. Whew, that's my background, but it's only because I only had one choice of where to sit.
Well, that's good that you have them, but I'm noticing now some of them are just backgrounds, and I don't know how to do it myself. Mm-hmm. I'm not that techie. I could probably twist my husband's arm, but frankly, I call in enough favors. That's one I don't really care that much about. But
right.
And where my books are, I couldn't sit there. There's too many of them that just see that I'm the absent-minded professor. You know, they aren't neat little bookshelves. They've got, I ran out of room, you know, so many books, so little time, you know, that they're kind of stacked there. But a lot of people get backgrounds. You know, they get the backgrounds and the backgrounds that aren't their house at all. I'm noticing more and more of them that have the books as the background. So I was kind of laughing and wondering about that. I thought it was funny that somebody actually took the time. I don't know if they wrote a book or if it was an article or a blog I read. It was it wasn't a book. If it was, then I was just reading an article about the book or something. But I actually read that and thought, wow, somebody has actually taken the time to evaluate what a person's like by their background on Zoom. That opened a new niche for someone.
Yeah, I'm sure it
you did. Know?
Yeah. It's a little odd, but yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, someone's always looking for some hidden meaning in something, I think, probably. But, yeah. I mean, you know, I think, you know, just I'll just add one more thing, Kim, and I really enjoyed the conversation, and that is that, you know, what you said about having a job and, you know, hey, I've been there too. So, you know, I had a friend who years ago passed away from cancer, and as she was going through that, you know, knowing where she was going to not be able to survive, she said to me, you know what, Vicki, I'd give anything for another crappy day at work. And I've felt that story in my heart for a long time, and I've shared it with other people. So if you don't like where you're at work and you can't make a change in your situation, you know, just think of one thing that you can do for somebody else or for your workplace. What can you do that might make where you work a little bit better? You know, and again, a lot of it is just, you know, talking to people, building relationships to the extent that you can, joining particular organizations if they exist at your workplace, you know, business resource councils and things like that. And or if you can't do any of those things, what's one thing that you can do when you get home to think about, you know, okay, what's one step I can take towards changing my job in the future? No matter how long it takes, it took me, you know, 15 years to get an undergraduate degree. I'm not saying that that's the answer for you, but whatever your answer is, it doesn't matter how fast you go. It just matters that you, you know, take a step. That's all.
Right, right, exactly. And there's, yeah, exactly. I'm going to leave it at that. That's a great point. Vicki, it's been really nice to meet you. Thank you so much for your time and consideration and coming and being a guest on the show. I wish you good luck with your book, and I hope you'll come back again sometime.
Thank you so much, and, you know, to all of the listeners, I really do. I wish you all the very best, and Kim, I thank you so much for your time, and thank you for your lovely work that you've done, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Great. Thanks so much. Good night.
Good night.
Okay, everybody, check out Vicki. Again, her website is in the program notes. VICKIZNAVOR.com. Learn about being authentic. As usual, I'm going to close out with one of our starving indie artists, speaking of employment and difficulties for some during the pandemic. This is Daniel Christian. You can find him at danielchristianmusic.com. And he's talking about what we're all trying to do. This is Find My Voice. Good night and God bless everyone. I look forward to seeing you next week, where Simon will be back for another episode of Simon Says. So we'll see you then. Have a good week. Good night.
Question never seems to change. Are you with them or are you with us? And And if it's true, I am not ashamed. There shouldn't be much to discuss. But for every answer that draws you near, there is an answer that will make you run. And as long as identity remains unclear, the coward will give the easy one. We can be automatic, carefully diplomatic. I need courage to speak my choice. Now that it's been a while since my courtyard denial, I am still trying to find my voice. I am still trying to find my voice. My brother is waiting to believe. We all love him just the same. There are gifts we both receive under the same sun and rain. I can't speak out of stillness, but I'm waiting to fill this space with courage to make my choice. How can we preach salvation from our own isolation? I am trying to find my voice. I am just trying to find my voice. Getting used to my own skin. Never knew I would come this far. When you get too good at fitting in, it's hard to tell who you really are. Now is the time to make my choice. Now is the time to find my
play one more song for my very first indie artist when I started over 10 years ago. Wonderful songstress. You can find her on YouTube, Leah West, or check out her website, leahwest.com. And only because I said the temperatures didn't feel like it, officially we're there. So I'm going to close this out, hoping for a little good karma with Spring. This is Leah West with Spring.
Oh,
long.